Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the October 27th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Egyptian football fans are excited and very proud of the goal-scoring heroics by Liverpool star Mohamed Salah. Salah is currently leading the English Premier League in scoring with 10 goals. On Sunday, the Egyptian star had a hat trick in a 5-0 rout of Manchester United at Old Trafford. That increased Salah's career EPL scoring total to 107 goals, the most by an African player. To find out more about Egyptian reaction, Iron Mike Mbonye called Cairo, where he reached the Secretary General of Egypt's National Olympic Committee, Sharif Alarian.
Indeed, Mike, Mohamed Salah is the top scorer of the English Premier League. And the reactions here in Egypt are incredible. Everyone's so proud. Everyone is feeling like as if they had done the achievement themselves. People wait for his matches and cafes and at homes gatherings to cheer for Mohamed Salah and Liverpool. It's like everyone now is a Liverpool fan in Egypt. He's really hyped up the Egyptian population behind him and a lot of expectations every match.
Do you think other African players in the English Premier League have potentials to emulate Salah's goals?
I think the only two players in the English Premier League from Africa who really are not at the same level as Salah, I'll say, but close and making their countries proud too, are Sadio Mane from Senegal, who also plays in Liverpool, and Riyad Mahrez, who plays for Manchester City, who's from Algeria. They both are exceptional players as well. Did not reach Mohamed Salah excellence, but definitely one of the great players in Africa and in the world also.
What has been the reaction of Egyptians to Mohamed Salah's performance in the English Premier League?
My reaction personally is I'm extremely proud of his achievement, his dedication. Okay, the real thing that really got Salah going is his dedication for training, for learning. He is a true professional. I wish we had other players in football and in other sports who had the same dedication. His tough, let's say, beginnings, okay, coming up from a poor family in a very rural area in Egypt, and having to suffer with not enough money, with transportation to trainings, living away from his family, with some of the clubs he played for, the lack of knowledge, school, not being able to speak English in the beginning or any other language, and working with himself to upgrade himself in those areas. It's a remarkable story of real toughness and dedication, really.
That's Sharif Alarian, the Secretary General of Egypt's National Olympic Committee. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Cairo, Egypt. Mo Salah and Liverpool will be back on the pitch later Wednesday when they play a road match against Preston North End in a fourth-round Carabao Cup match. Let's give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to Carly Lloyd, who played her 316th and final match for the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team on Tuesday night in St. Paul, Minnesota. The 39-year-old Lloyd ended her stellar international career on a winning note, with the USA beating South Korea 6-0 in a friendly match. Lloyd was subbed out in the 65th minute, and she cried as she left to a standing ovation by the more than 18,000 fans in attendance. Carly Lloyd is retiring after one of the greatest careers in women's football history. She won two Women's World Cup titles, two Olympic gold medals, and two FIFA Women's Player of the Year awards. Lloyd's 316 caps are the second most by any player, trailing only American countrywoman Christine Lilly's 354 international appearances. Carly Lloyd scored 134 goals for the USA, third most in team history. VOA's Gwen Uten tells us more about Carly Lloyd's memorable career. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. In a statement released by the U.S. Soccer Federation, Carly Lloyd said when she first started out with the national team in 2005, her two main goals were to be the most complete soccer player she could be and to help the team win championships. And she has certainly achieved both of those goals as her storied career comes to an end. The two-time FIFA Women's Player of the Year helped them win two World Cup championships, two Olympic gold medals, and most recently, the bronze. And ahead of this year's games, Lloyd described to Reuters News how it felt to represent the United States again in Tokyo.
You know, it never gets old hearing congratulations, you're going to Tokyo type thing. Was extremely honored, grateful, and you know, I think it's just great to know that the roster has been named, and you know, you can just kind of now take a deep breath and just focus all your energy on just doing everything possible to help the team win this gold medal. That's the biggest thing, and it's going to take all 18 players to get this job done.
The U.S. women's soccer team were favored to win gold at this year's games, but the Americans suffered a surprise 1-0 defeat to Canada in the semifinals. But in their next match against Australia, Carly Lloyd scored a record 10th Olympic gold to help her team win bronze. Lloyd's road to the Tokyo Games wasn't always smooth. In 2019, she was outspoken about her frustration with then national team head coach Jill Ellis after Lloyd was downsized to the role of substitute during the 2020 World Cup tournament in France, a snub the 39-year-old believes was based on her age and not her ability.
I think the biggest thing for me, you know, in prepping for that 2019 World Cup was I just felt as if I never had an opportunity to prove myself. I came back from an ankle injury in 2017 that I sustained with the Houston Dash in the NWSL. I was out for a bit. I came back and, you know, I just saw the writing on the wall. Coming back from that ankle injury, I never once, not one single time, in training sessions, in games, had an opportunity to prove myself. I was already being written off. I was already, you know, wanting to be pushed out of the way. But, you know, my biggest thing is just be so good they can't ignore you.
And Lloyd continued to live by that motto. Last June, she made history as the oldest player to score for the U.S. women's national team. But Lloyd says she hopes to be remembered for her age-defying talent on the pitch.
I didn't want things to be based on my age. I didn't want people to sit here and feed off of this nonsense that wasn't true, that I'm too old, I can't play 90 minutes. I'm playing 90 minutes. I'm fit. I'm one of the fittest on the team. And you have Vlatko not talking about my age. You know, Vlatko's given me an opportunity, just like everybody else, to perform and to play. And if you're good enough, you're going to make the roster and you're going to play. It's as simple as that. So I'm thankful that I've got a coach who isn't using my age against me, and he's giving me a fair shot.
In her announcement, Lloyd said, through all the goals, the trophies, the medals, and the championships won, what I'm most proud of is that I've been able to stay unapologetically me. My journey has been hard, but I can honestly say I've stayed true to myself, to my teammates, my coaches, the media, and the fans throughout my entire career. And that is what I am most proud of. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. And while Carly Lloyd's international career is now over, she will continue playing for Gotham FC in the National Women's Soccer League until the season ends next month.
Hello, listeners. By the names, I'm Ikwa Putfazila, Lady Doves FC Club. Then I play for the Crested Crane forward. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Fazila and the Crested Cranes of Uganda are through to the next round in the qualifying competition for the 2022 Africa Women's Cup of Nations football tournament in Morocco. In the first round, the Crested Cranes defeated Ethiopia 2-1 in a penalty kick shootout. The shootout took place after the teams ended their two-match qualifying series in a 2-2 draw. Next up for the Ugandan women is neighbor Kenya and another two-match qualifying series in February 2022. After February's qualifying matches, 11 African women's teams will join host Morocco at the Africa Women's Cup of Nations football tournament scheduled for July 2022. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, let's listen in again to a report by Magume Davis Rakawinge, who visited with the Crested Cranes at their training camp before the qualifiers against Ethiopia.
Uganda Crested Cranes train at Fa Technical Stadium Njeru, Eastern Uganda, in preparation for the Alcon qualifiers against Ethiopia and the watchful eyes of tactician George Williams Rutaro. The team is comprised of both senior players, including those playing overseas, such as defender Otande Kalachi, who features for New Jersey Copper FC in Metuchen, New Jersey, as well as younger players graduating from the under-20 squad.
So far in camp, the training has been going well. The girls are very talented, and everybody has a lot of high energy and different skill sets. So I'm really excited to see how this game against Ethiopia goes, because it's a must-win, and we've been working so hard since about a month and a half now, and I can't wait to see the results.
Lach says she's glad to don the Crested Cranes jersey. She says the stakes are high for the team to qualify for the Continental Showpiece.
Yeah, that would be pretty important to qualify for AFCON, because I don't think Uganda has done it before, so it would be nice to be a part of the team that made a way and made history for the first time to make it to that level. And of course, it would be great to make this country proud.
The Crested Cranes must score goals if the teams fly higher in Africa, a thing that has eluded them on many occasions. The Crested Cranes struggled for goals in the SACAFA 2019 regional tournament in Kigali, Rwanda, as they clinched a third finish. They also failed to score against neighbors Kenya in the 2019 Alcon qualifiers and were edged by 1-0. The team also lost in the recent Olympic qualifiers against an attacking Ethiopian squad by 4-2 goals aggregate. Striker Sandra Nabeteme was called from Uganda under-20 team that featured in the recent COSAFA Cup to bolster the attacking force that is comprised of experienced players like Fazila Kwaput, who previously featured for BK Zagat in Kazakhstan, as well as Juliet Nalukenge, who plays for Apollon Ladies Football Club, a first division club in Cyprus. Sandra, who plays her trade in Iceland, says she's up to the task to solve the Crested Cranes' woes.
We have been working on our finishing, because when we were in South Africa, it was our biggest problem. So now we are back here, focusing on working on our finishing, getting goals in to see that we win the game. If we play on a big stage, like if we qualify for AUCON, it would mean like life for us. Teams are going to be looking at you, scouts are going to be there. But I mean, that is not like our main focus. Our main focus is playing for Uganda to see that we also get known. Because we have a competition with the U20s. They have been doing good. We also have to work hard to see that we give the nation something.
Team captain Ruth Aturo says she knows a thing or two against the Ethiopians.
We have ever played with Ethiopia several times in the Tokyo qualifiers, in CECAFRA. Yes, and now this is another chance we're going to play against them in the AUCON qualifiers. Well, Ethiopia is a very good team. They're so comfortable on the ball, but we also see some of their weaknesses whereby we're also better in some places more than them, because the last time we played with them, we beat them 1-0. That was in CECAFA, that was in Tanzania. So we believe that the preparation we have had right now, looking at how we played against them and how they play, we have tried our level best to see that we improve on the places that really need to improve on, and I believe this time around we're going to do better than last time.
Crested Cranes head coach George Williams Lutaro tells the Sunnyside of Sports that his team is in great shape.
Right now the mood is good in the camp. The spirit in which the players are doing all activities is really promising, and we have the hope in the coming game that we are going to perform well. Yeah, we need to have a target. We have a target that we set, and we must achieve it. The moment we achieve it, we shall be able to have qualified. We shall be able to have qualified. It will really be a good moment for the ladies team. If we qualify, this is going to be a stepping stone.
For the Sunnyside of Sports, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji, Kampala, Uganda.
Hello, listeners. My name is Otunde Kalachi. I play for the Uganda Women's National Football Team, the Crested Cranes, and for New Jersey Copa FC. And you are listening to the Sunnyside of Sports on the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Thanks, David. That's David Vandy, the host of the VOA's African Beat music show. On the African Boxing Beat, Samuel Tachi was Team Ghana's big hero at this year's Tokyo Olympics. Samuel took home a bronze medal in the men's featherweight division. It was Ghana's first Olympic medal in 29 years. In this sunny side of sports Olympic highlight for 2021, Prince Nesta samples some reaction from Ghanaian sports fans.
I spoke to a few Ghanaians to hear their reactions on what the win means for them in their country, and what the country should do in order to guarantee more medals in the next Olympics.
Oh, we feel happy because it's almost 29 years now we've won medal. The only thing the government has to do is to resource the guys so that they can get more boxes and have the equipment. Well, Ghana here, they are lacking so many things. The train, the gym, if you go there, the boxing gym, we don't have boxing gym here. So they have to do it more and get more trainers, so that they will help the guys to improve. Every time they go, they bring more medals, because they put Ghana on the map. Boxing is not easy. It's not an easy thing at all. So if that guy won it, because there are so many people, for Ghana to win that medal is a plus for us. It's not easy. I want to say to someone, you shouldn't be more complacent. You shouldn't say that you have won with this one, so you will relax. You should train more. You should train hard. Sky is the limit. The more you do, the more you get recognized. Mayweather and Cody, they started like this. You have to encourage yourself more, train well. And there are so many things, as a boxer or as a trainer, me myself, I'm a trainer, so there are so many things you have to avoid. Womanizing and drinking alcohol and drugs. You remove that one every day, focus on your training. the sky's the limit. You'll be there.
We are happy. We are happy that you win. All the Ghanaians praying for who win. But now you go and win the medal. So we are praying. So he should go high. He should make the training, high training. So all the Ghanaians, we Africa countries, we are praying for him to go high for us.
And so the win has made you happy. How do you think the country feels like? Did they feel disappointed maybe he didn't bring home a gold?
No. It's a game. Everybody have a talent. Plenty of people go, then he go and win. So we are happy. We are happy for him that he bring that drums to Ghana. So he should try his best to the family to make happy, more happy. He should don't make a lazy. He should make that he don't follow the guys, or the this thing. That man, if he follow that thing there, he could fall down. So he should go high to leave there. That if he have one girl, that's all. No, this girl. He should try his best. We pray for him.
I felt great. I felt excited. And it tells you the kind of talents we have in the country. Should things go well going forward, the government has a lot to do. Especially the government should start seeing sports as jobs. They keep saying they are creating jobs, but they, for me, what I see is they are creating non-existent jobs or jobs that will not only exist after a certain shorter period. But should they be able to kind of like set and put things in place, just get to know that sports is also another job. For them to understand that, they'll be able to solve some of these issues, and then it's really going to help the youth. And we are going to create more jobs, and we'll be able to bring something back from the Olympics in the next 4 years.
How did the win, Samuel's win, make you feel?
Oh, we feel happy. We all feel happy. We think that God may raise him up, that he may want more. He shouldn't take this, that this, though he doesn't mind. He doesn't think that he has won. But he have to work hard to improve his marriage. He made the flag of Ghana since 29 years ago. Only someone has come back to do the same thing. So congratulations to him.
What do you think maybe the government should do so that next time there will be more competitive?
You see, sometimes financial problems, all the boxers and the footballers, they need some support. Without support, they can't do anything. And they need money to do something. They have to go to some place. The government have to work hard and put money on their accounts so that the footballers and the boxers, all the athletes can do well for us, give the money to do the work.
His performance actually is very, very good. It's almost 29 years down the line. There's no achievement for this country. And the secondary, our leaders always put their eyes on football, but not those athletes. But see the performance and the win rest the guy did for Ghanaians. So yeah, I'm proud of the guy. Our leaders should keep eyes on those boxes than the footballers, because the footballer cannot achieve anything since 1981 or 1982. As of now, Brassard didn't achieve anything for this nation. But look at the huge amount they put in the Brassard. Right now, look at the performance that guy put in the Olympic game. It's very accolade, and then we are happy as a Ghanaian. We are proud of him too.
For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Prince Nesta.
My name is Coach Ofori Asari, the head coach of the national boxing team of Ghana. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight? Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
The Atlanta Braves won the opening game of Major League Baseball's World Series Tuesday night, beating the host, Houston Astros. The AP's Adam Spillane reports from Houston, Texas.
Jorge Soler and Adam Duvall smacked home runs as the Atlanta Braves took Game 1 of the World Series by beating the Houston Astros 6-2. So Lair's homer came on the game's third pitch, and Duvall's third inning two-run shot staked the Braves to a 5-0 lead. Duvall said the early lead helped settle his team down.
Doing that on the road and, you know, kind of getting them first at bat jitters out of the way is big. So, you know, obviously this is a long series. It's going to be a dogfight. So we'll enjoy this one and then get focused and ready for tomorrow.
Charlie Morton started for Atlanta but had to leave in the third inning after suffering a fractured right fibula the inning before. Four Braves relievers held Houston to two runs over 6 2/3 innings, with A.J. Minter earning the win. Adam Spolane, Houston.
Thanks, Adam. Game two is later Wednesday night in Houston. Astros manager Dusty Baker.
Our team doesn't worry, and our team is very confident. And we, you know, have the knack of bouncing back after tough losses, because they don't quit, they don't give up, they don't get down. You know, and that's the secret of sports.
In the sport of tennis, players who have not received the COVID-19 vaccine will not be allowed to compete at the Australian Open in January. Victoria Premier Daniel Andrews made the announcement Wednesday. Joining us again with more details is VOA's Gwen Uden. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. The latest safety protocols directly contradict those made by Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison. On Wednesday, Morrison announced that unvaccinated tennis players would be given an exemption to play at the upcoming Australian Open tournament, provided they underwent a 2-week quarantine. However, just hours later, Victoria Premier Daniel Andrews told reporters his government will not apply for travel permits to allow unvaccinated tennis players to compete in his state.
All I'd say is this: I'm not going to ask people to, I'm not going to ask and actually require people sitting in the grandstand, people working at the event, to be vaccinated while players aren't. So we're not going to be applying for an exemption. So therefore, the issue is basically resolved.
Australia has effectively sealed its borders for the past 18 months in an effort to control the spread of COVID-19 in the region. And Andrews says the latest safety measures for the upcoming event will be enforced for the good of the people.
What I'm making equally clear on behalf of every vaccinated Victorian who is doing the right thing, and across the board, we're putting restrictions on. We're locking people who are unvaccinated out of pubs and cafes and restaurants and the G and all sorts of other events. The only fair thing to do is to be very clear with every Victorian: my government will not be applying for an exemption for any unvaccinated player.
The new mandate is sure to be unwelcome news for Tennis Australia organizers, who hope to showcase a strong field in the upcoming tournament. The top three male tennis stars, Novak Djokovic, Stefanos Tsitsipas, and Daniil Medvedev, have all failed to disclose their vaccination status, which could rule them out of competition. And while Andrews emphasized that he was still on track to host the tournament, he reiterated his government will not apply for exemptions for unvaccinated athletes.
We've got the greatest tennis facility in the world. Victorian taxpayers have supported the redevelopment, which is still ongoing, of that facility. It is, I think, the best Grand Slam venue anywhere in the world. That's what all the international tennis people tell me every year when they're here for it. So I think it's highly unlikely that anybody else is going to be hosting that event. We will be hosting that event, but we will not be applying for an exemption for unvaccinated players to come here. And that is the only fair thing to do.
Recent data reveals that only about 50% of tennis athletes are fully vaccinated. And Daniel Andrews says the hundreds of thousands of spectators that are expected to attend the Australian Open will need to show proof that they, too, are vaccinated. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uden. Finally, let's give a Sunny Side of Sports birthday salute to Maria Mutola, Mozambique's 2000 Olympic champion and three-time world champion at 800 meters. Nicknamed the Maputo Express, Mutola is recognized as one of the greatest female 800 meters runners ever, and she's celebrating her 49th birthday on this Wednesday. Happy birthday to the Maputo Express, Maria Mutola. And that wraps up the October 27th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the sunny side of sports.